For over 50 years, they redefined rock. The spirit lives on.
Monday warrior, me stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, me pride.
Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson. Rush. Live 50-something tour. Sign up for pre-sale access at Ticketmaster. Legends don't stop. They evolve. Rush.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Korea. The Korean War of 1950 to 1953 is unending. I welcome Patrick K. O'Donnell. Patrick is the author of Give Me Tomorrow, The Korean War's Greatest Untold Story, the epic stand of the Marines of George Company. We go immediately to the end of November 1950. We're in a place that is, according to the memory of the veterans of the Marine Corps, is a place that's suggestive of primeval times. Dinosaurs could come out of the hills. This is the area that is remembered as the retreat from the Chosin Reservoir, but really it's a long roadway all the way up to the Chosin Reservoir from the Sea of Japan. We're at a place now where there is desperation. The Chinese, in the hundreds of thousands, have attacked the Marines of X Corps, who are strung along this long road and in and around the Chosin Reservoir. The group we care most about is George Company, which, because of the difficulties of transportation, is at the end of the long train of Marines plunging into deeper into North Korea. The reason we're with George Company at this moment is that George Company and a few other elements, such as British Commandos, are all that the commander, Lieutenant Colonel Chesty Puller, has to send in to secure the gathering together of the exposed Marine elements. We're at a place called Koto Ri, and it's necessary to go up this single road, which Patrick describes as an elevated dike, to Haguru Ri. Patrick, congratulations and a very good evening to you. I go immediately to the critical players in this relief convoy of Marines and U.S. soldiers and commandos. A man by the name of Drysdale. He is a Brit, and he commands this unit. Who is Drysdale, and what is his mission? Good day to you.
Good day, John. Lieutenant Colonel Drysdale is the commander of 41 Commando. These are Royal Marines, and this is the first time since the Boxer Rebellion that Marines of the American Marines and the Royal Marines will be working together. And they're in a very desperate situation. This is the end of November 1950, and the Chinese have a massive army that is coiled around the 1st Marine Division, which is strung out on a series of outposts along this road. Puller is at Koto Ri, and the key node in this road is a place called Haguru Ri, and they are desperately holding the line against a massive tens of thousands of Chinese that have massed around Haguru Ri. If they break through at Haguru Ri, the entire line collapses and the 1st Marine Division will be destroyed. And with it, potentially the entire war is at stake. George Company and Drysdale have to break through along a 11-mile stretch of road to get to Haguru Ri at all costs. Chesty Puller tells Drysdale that he must get through at all costs, and they assemble a scratch force of bakers, anybody that they can find, cooks from the army, as well as George Company, which is kind of left behind in this long train as they were heading up. They have to literally break through to the Chosin Reservoir to bring in vital reinforcements. There's also some tanks that are involved. And these men, about 1,000 strong, have to go up this road, which is surrounded on hills by a Chinese division. This is a mission impossible, John. And somehow these men have to do it.
It's also well under zero, minus 10 to minus 60. They have very few resources. There is marine air when it's daylight and when they can call upon it. But basically, they're on their own. and Carl Sitter commands George Company. A man by the name of Zulo is the senior non-com. You introduce us to all the players from PFC to the commander Sitter, and their task is impossible. But they're told if they're not successful, then all of their comrades in the 5th Marines and the 7th Marines will be cut off and destroyed. So they must get to Haguro Ree. They set off immediately, and they come up against something they call Telegraph Hill. What happens there, Patrick?
Lieutenant Commander Drysdale addresses the Marines and said, "Lads, this won't be a walk in the park." And they initially try to clear each hill of Chinese forces, but they quickly realize that this will take too long to get up this 12-mile road. So they clear the hill initially. They charge up the hill, destroy the Chinese, but then they push down the road as the Chinese are pelting them with machine gun fire and mortars and even artillery. And they rumble down the road to the first roadblock, which is a bunch of hastily set up things that are there to just obscure the trucks and the tanks. They push through that and they keep pushing down this road, and they're taking casualties the whole time, John.
And that's the rhythm that now they follow through these 11 miles. They move a little bit. You estimate 5 to 10 miles per hour, and then they stop and they come under fire. They clear the roadway and start again. At some point, it becomes obvious that they're surrounded and don't have any help coming to them. Some of the wounded are sent back to Koto Ri. Is that correct, Patrick? Sometimes they turn the trucks around and say, "We've got so many wounded, we can't take them with us. Send them back to Koto Ri." But those who can walk, those who can ride, continue to go, though there is nothing ahead of them but more ambush.
Absolutely. And what happens is the Chinese are moving in and around this convoy of trucks and then tanks, which are actually put up in the front of the convoy. Their job is to break through. The decision was made to put the tanks up front, and that was probably the correct decision if they wanted to get at least part of this convoy through as a breakthrough force. If they had spaced the tanks out, they may have saved the entire convoy, because what happens is the convoy is cut in half by the Chinese, and elements of the army, which are in the rear, as well as some of the Marine Corps, are surrounded by the Chinese, and many are executed. It's hand-to-hand combat. It's vicious. Half this convoy of 1,000 men does not make it to Haguro Ree. That's how desperate this thing is.
This is the end of November 1950. It's important to understand how this came about. And for that, we need to go back to the summertime of 1950. June of 1950, the North Korean army launches a sneak attack to overrun Seoul and run most of the way down the peninsula. At that point, the U.S. military was not in a position to defend Seoul, nor really much to hold on. Miraculously, they do hold on to the southern tip of Korea. The army sacrifices a great amount in order to hold on. The 5th Marines, is my memory, Patrick, are rushed in to seal the holes in the line. But back in Japan, General Douglas MacArthur, who's been commanding the Japanese occupation, now has to pull together a force to rescue the 5th Marines, the 24th Infantry, and what's left of the Republic of Korea's army, all crowded in the southern part of the peninsula. He has a plan. What is the plan, Patrick?
The plan's really, John, one of the most daring operations in military history. He plans to land at Incheon, which is not far away from Seoul. But he does it at a time where everything has to go according to plan. The tides have to be exactly right in order to make the landing. And the North Koreans know this, and they believe it's really quite impossible. But MacArthur makes the point to the Joint Chiefs that this impossibility is its best asset. The element of surprise will be on his side. And it's George Company that's in the first wave at Incheon. What makes George Company unique is that these are men that were largely reservists. They had no boot camp training. Like the military in general, we were unprepared. We had demobilized from World War II of a force of 12 million men down to, you know, a small percentage of that. Much of the Marine Corps was in mothballs. They were wise enough to take a lot of their equipment and put in mothballs, but they were down to less than a division, and they had to reassemble the 1st Marine Division. And George Company, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, is part of that division. And they reconstitute. Many of these men had no training. It's kind of like the Bad News Bears of military training. They didn't know how to fire their M1 Garands. They didn't know how to throw a grenade. They learned literally on the boats on their way towards Korea to train. And that was their training for the most part. These are young kids that are right out of high school that that have to quickly learn, and they do. They're under the command of senior non-coms that were in the Pacific War. Many of these men, like Rocco Zullo, who you mentioned earlier, Master Sergeant Rocco Zullo was a Silver Star recipient at Peleliu, and really kind of whips these men into shape. And their officers as well were senior veterans of the Pacific War.
We're headed for Blue Beach, Incheon, mid-September 1950. The book is Give Me Tomorrow, The Korean War's Greatest Untold Story, The Epic Stand of the Marines of George Company. Patrick K. O'Donnell is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.